now.
And welcome to the SVK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name is Charles Story. I'll be your host in the next 15 minutes. We're coming live from the city of London, Shoreditch. So let's get down to business. Bitcoin is currently trading at $3,504, down 2.5% in the last 24 hours. We have Ripple currently trading at 30 cents, that's down 4%. Ethereum currently trading at $90.99, down 5% in the last 24 hours. We have Stellar currently trading at 11 cents. Down 5%, and Bitcoin Cash currently trading at $105, down 4%. I want to give a special shout out to EOS, which is currently trading at $1.95. That's down 1%. But over the weekend, a stress test happened on the Jungle Test Network, which basically came out of the result of 17,000 transactions per second is possible on EOS, which is huge, big news, which is, I believe, is 1,000x more than Ethereum at this current point in time. But I know they're working on that, which we'll get to in a second. So big shout out to all of the EOS ecosystem and community for all pulling together and doing a phenomenal job with that one. So with that in mind, let's get down to business. Let's work out what's been going down over the weekend, what news stories have come out, what you need to know for the week ahead. So with that in mind, let's get down to business and get on to the next part of the show. So, as I just mentioned, Ethereum are currently working to help their scaling issue. There's lots of people around the world working towards that. But this story really highlights what's currently going down in the Ethereum camp at this current point in time. So, 8 teams are sprinting to build the next generation of Ethereum. We don't want to reinvent the wheel for Ethereum 2.0. Speaking out the complementary efforts of developers working on two separate upgrades to the Ethereum blockchain, one dubbed Ethereum 2.0 and the other dubbed Ethereum 1X. Paul Jordan insists upgrades to be included in Ethereum 1X on a shorter time horizon would have benefits to ongoing research for Ethereum 2.0. So Jordan is the co-lead for one of the 8 different developers' teams currently building software clients for Ethereum 2.0. As background, clients are software implementations usually written in differing programming languages that users deploy to connect to participate in the Ethereum network. So maintaining that is the incremental enhancements being proposed by within Ethereum 1X don't affect the blockchain's long-term roadmap, Jordan told media sources. So he says, I think both groups are fairly orthogonal, which is a phenomenal word. And for those that don't know what it means, the definition is of or evolving right angles at right angles. So I think both groups are fairly orthogonal, but we must at least be aware of what each is implementing. So presently, the technical guidelines are also called specifications for both upgrades are still very much in the works. Having been discussed in earnings among Ethereum developers only in the last couple of weeks, Ethereum 1X is intended to be an implementary upgrade that focusing on enhancements to the current Ethereum network. So Ethereum 2.0, on the other hand, features a more ambitious agenda that dates back to 2014 and consists of fundamental changes to the blockchain's platform. So known in its earlier days as project name Serenity, the current specifications for Ethereum 2.0 can be summarized as a combination of 3 main components. Number 1, a switch to proof of stake from the current energy intensive consensus protocol known as proof of work. Implementation of a network-wide scaling solution called sharding. And number 3, a revamping of the Ethereum virtual machine EVM, the engine responsible for deploying decentralized applications known as dApps on the blockchain to run a new programming code called as WebAssembly. Okay, so that's interesting. So, and while these are the main components, namely Ethereum's implementation of WASM, which is WebAssembly, has the potential of being tested in the earlier roadmap of Ethereum 1X. The majority of the work to build out Ethereum 2.0 is still ongoing as a separate project. So it's really interesting. Like these, there are currently 8 teams at the minute. So I'll give you a rundown of these teams. So team number 1 is Chainsafe, based out of Toronto, Canada. Chainsafe Systems is a blockchain research and development startup offering consulting services to a number of different Ethereum-based projects, including Shift, Bonds, Aeon, and Polymath. So they're one of the projects working on, one of the teams working on this, sorry. Pegasus is number 2. Pegasus, they come up with a quote saying, our goal is to bring enterprises to the mainnet. We want to do that by creating software that's easy for enterprises to adopt. These guys have been working with a few different consensus-based projects. They're supported by Consensus themselves, self-proclaimed virtual production studio of Ethereum, headed by Ethereum co-founder Joseph Lubin. Pegasus is building out Ethereum 2.0 specifications for an existing Ethereum Java client called Pantheon. So number three, we have Harmony. So launched last October, Harmony is Ethereum's original Java client, formerly maintained by a group of independent developers by EtherCamp. Number four, we have Parity Ethereum. Co-founded by Ethereum Foundation Chief of Security Officer Jutta Steiner, Parity Technologies is a blockchain infrastructure company responsible for maintaining the second most popular Ethereum client on the platform today. Number five, Prismatic Labs, which is interesting. Like a lot of these teams, I guess you can call them entities, are set up to basically help either the team building Ethereum 2.0 or the other team, Ethereum 1x. So like each team is supporting like one of the possible outcomes, and there's like two options. It just seems so, it's just so, like, I don't feel with Ethereum, especially like at the minute, I don't feel that everyone's together in the community there. I feel people are really split with their views. So it's a really interesting time for the Ethereum community, and it'd be interesting to see what the outcome is and see what the people are really going to back and vote for in that sense. So let's switch gears now and talk about Vertcoin. So Vertcoin's struggle is real. Why the latest crypto 51% attack matters. So let's jump in. So you may not have heard of Vertcoin, a crypto project designed to curtail concentration and mining power in the interest of board-based participation. But if you care about security, decentralization, and open access for cryptocurrencies, then the question raised by a recent breach of its blockchain will matter to you. In a textbook, 51% attack documented in a blog post by Coinbase security engineer Mark Nesbitt, someone seized majority control of Vertcoin Network's hash power to conduct multiple reorgs of the blockchain. The attacker essentially rewrote parts of the ledger's history, and then using their dominant hashing power to produce the longest chain, convinced the rest of the miners to validate this new version of the blockchain. With that, he or she could commit the ultimate crypto crime, a double spend or prior transactions, leaving earlier payees with invalid coins. So it was a painful blow for Vertcoin's passionate community of users, led by a dedicated decentralized team of developers. Last year's money-grabbing ICO issuers, for 4 years, they have defended their ASIC-resistant algorithm as a way to avoid the industrialized concentration of Bitcoin and other proof-of-work cryptocurrencies. Now, the bear market in cryptocurrencies has posed them off with a challenging question. Was their constant commitment to maintaining the competitiveness of affordable, general-purpose mining equipment worth it? Is their otherwise laudable goal of democratized mining only creating an untenable security risk? Not surprisingly, critics, including many Bitcoin maximalists, see the affair as a nail in the coffin for Vertcoin and other such projects. These ASIC-resistant projects' algorithms are designed to ensure that powerful rigs running expensive, uniquely designed, application-specific integrated circuits, ASICs, have no advantage over those with graphic cards or GPUs are widely available. More affordable processing unit that can be used for gaming consoles and other purposes. The problem, these critics say, is that if mining is relatively cheap and can be employed by simply taking a machine that's currently doing one thing and having to do a different task, it's easy for an attacker to deploy enough hashing power to seize control of the network. As a Breaker Mag headline declared, Vertcoin's greatest strength seems now to be a fatal flaw. Yet, there's still no slam dunk argument in favor of ASIC-dominated cryptocurrencies. By a measure, concentrated ASIC-led mining power has fostered centralization around a few big players, which not only raises the risk of a 51% attack by any of those large operators on their own or in collusion, but also puts them in a role as de facto gatekeepers. That violates the anti-middleman objectives of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology generally. Look at how Bitmain has, with varying success, periodically used its position as the dominant provider of Bitcoin mining hardware to manipulate the market and force its interest on the wider community. While it's true that Bitmain has at times been thwarted by its opponents, notably by developers who successfully introduced the SegWit Witness, SegWit, updates to Bitcoin's code against its wishes, there's an argument that this only puts users at the mercy of a different kind of gatekeeper group, the Bitcoin core developers. The arms race unleashed by ASIC-based competition for block rewards has also resulted in massive energy consumption in proof-of-work cryptocurrencies. While I believe Bitcoin's threat on the planet is overblown, and I'm encouraged by a recent CoinShares calculation that 77.6% of Bitcoin mining uses renewable power, there's no denying that electricity usage remains both an environmental challenge and a serious public relations problem for the industry. What's more, it's not clear that ASIC mining models are immune from the root cause of Vertcoin's problem. Essentially, falling coin prices made mining less profitable and resulted in lower rental rates for already installed hardware on cloud mining sites such as NiceHash. It has that rented capacity, not newly deployed machines, that gave an attacker a quick, low-cost route to amassing hash power. All cryptocurrencies, both ASIC-resistant and ASIC-allowing versions, have been seen mining rental rates fall as crypto assets market have collapsed. That has a big pool of installed ASIC capacity, attackers' disposal, undermining the argument that ASIC coins are protected because their rigs are more expensive to acquire and deploy than general-purpose GPUs. It's true that if there's not enough rented hashing power to power or to reach 51%, then an attacker will face a bigger barrier if they must deploy new ASICs to get there. But if the attacker is already a large-scale ASIC miner, that's not necessarily a big leap either. Some developers are seeing the Vertcoin experience as a warning for all cryptocurrencies, viewing this bear market, which is playing havoc for mining profitability, an all-encompassing threat to consensus models. Even before the worst of the downturn, 51% attacks seem to be becoming more common. In comments to a Twitter thread he started regarding Nesbitt's blog post, Zcash developer Zocco Wilcox suggested that the threat was quite wide indeed. This is what he said on Twitter: there's no reason to think that the same attack wouldn't work against Zcash, Ethereum, or Bitcoin. To be sure, Bitcoin appears to be significantly less vulnerable than other coins because of its mass hashing power, though itself down sharply since October. So it's interesting. So in contrast, with a mere $131 cost for a 51% attack on Vertcoin on Friday, a Bitcoin attack would cost you $226,000 per hour, according to the website Crypto51. And that doesn't take into account that the fact that the current list of cloud mining providers could never deliver enough hashing power for a rent to grab majority control of the network. Also, if bottom fishers eventually stabilize Bitcoin's price, which is now down more than 80% over the past 12 months, it will allow the protocol's inbuilt difficult adjustment to catch up and start to restore mining profitability. Still, this case for Bitcoin's superior security systems or stems from its status as the dominant coin, not the present of the ASICs per se, and it's unreasonably assumes no further improvements to the various models aimed at achieving alternative consensus and governing models. We are no means in stasis. Developers within both altcoins and Bitcoin communities continue to explore decentralized solutions, and for good reason. The purpose of the technology has always been to achieve peer-to-peer exchange with broad permissionless access that no gatekeepers can control. So it's interesting, as you've just heard, like, we're hearing more and more about these 51% attacks. I remember we did a story a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was a month ago now, where we had this guy. He was a hacker. I forgot his Twitter handle, and he'd literally come on live on Twitter and announce which coin he was going to hack. I swear to God, he would announce the ticker symbol of that coin and the day and the time he'd hack it. Many cases he was successful, many cases that, you know, they were basically prepared for his attack. I mean, why wouldn't you if this guy has a track record in taking down in taking down networks, announce he's gonna take down yours, why wouldn't you be prepared for that, right? But I mean, it's crazy. Like, what he's doing is illegal. But then again, no one can stop him in many cases because they just didn't have enough power to back him up, or they didn't have enough capital to go against him. And for $131, which is like, well, if you look at the bigger picture, for $100 million, you know, valued company, quote unquote, $131 takes down your whole network. Are you serious? Like, it's insane what's going on out there at the minute with some of these kind of smaller networks that are looking to be built. But then again, I really see this as kind of the strong will survive. Like, that's just how it is. A high tide floats all boats. The tide is out, and we're seeing a lot of these other networks crumble. And the question is, do they deserve to survive? Do they deserve to see this through? Are they prepared? Have they thought about this? And a lot of people haven't. So with that in mind, listen, that's a wrap. I got to bounce. Thank you so much for your time and attention as always. Hit me up on email, cstory@svkcrypto.com. Join us on Telegram. That's where it goes down, man. The Telegram is popping. SVK crowd, one word, or you can put a split or a space between the SVK and crowd. Hit us up, man. That's where it goes down. And hit us up on Twitter for all the pictures at @svk_crypto. With that in mind, that's a wrap. I got to bounce. Thank you for your time and attention as always.
You've been listening to an SVK Crypto Podcast original. Follow us on Twitter at @svk_crypto. Email us on cstory@svkcrypto.com. Leave us a message on our website, www.svkcrypto.com.